Well, welcome everybody to our Orientation and Mobility Podcast. Lane McKittrick, are you there with us today?
Yes, I am. Thank you.
Great. Well, I want to welcome Lane, who is our special guest today on our Orientation and Mobility on the Go podcast. Lane is a PhD student, and more importantly, she is also the mother of four boys, two of whom have Usher syndrome, which is a leading cause of deaf blindness. But Lane's here to reflect with us today on both her personal experiences and her professional experiences, what she's learning on this journey. Particularly, Lane will share a little bit about the role of her son's orientation and mobility specialist, as well as her own reflections as a graduate researcher in self-determination and other discoveries. So I'm very excited to have Lane because of her versatility and because of her role in the community. Welcome. And tell us a little bit about yourself, Lane.
Yeah, so thank you so much for having me today. Amy mentioned that I have four boys, two of them have Usher syndrome. The oldest one is going to college next year. He is almost 19. And then my youngest, his birthday is today. He's turning 10. And so those are the ones that have Usher syndrome. So we've been working on these types of skills for several years with we've had many different IEP team members and O&M specialists working with our children. And so I'm happy to share those experiences with you.
Thank you so much. Well, along the way, tell us about how your sons have engaged with orientation and mobility. And maybe for our listeners, too, just refresh our collective memory on the impact of Usher syndrome itself.
Okay. Yeah, so both of my boys were born for family deaf. They do use cochlear implants to hear. And their vision loss is progressive. So it starts at about the age, well, between the age of 3 and 5, where my children started to experience night blindness and have difficulty seeing in dimly lit situations. As time progressed, they end up with some blind spots in their vision. My oldest son, it has progressed to the point where he has about 15 degrees of vision left. That he's dealing with. My 10-year-old, although really is experiencing night blindness at this point and does have some pockets of vision loss throughout his peripheral vision, but does pretty well, seeing if the lighting is okay.
So in terms of, that's really helpful, Lane, to think about just the experience of being deaf first and also having vision loss. And sometimes people don't recognize deaf blindness as its own unique disability. They think it's a this plus this equals deaf blindness. And really, you know, deaf blindness affects all kinds of aspects of learning. Would you reflect a little bit more on that for your sons and your own professional experience, how people who are deafblind put information together in different ways?
Yeah, for us, both of our boys are in a mainstream classroom. They receive consulting services from the teachers of visually impaired, but the person that they see most often is the O&M specialist. And, you know, obviously the O&M specialist then works with the gen ed teacher to really figure out what the needs are in the classroom. But we have seen, our district doesn't have anyone who has a familiarity with the dual sensory loss. I mean, they've seen a couple students, but they really don't, they've had to gain knowledge through working with our kids about how to work to try to figure out how to best serve our kids because of that dual sensory loss. So, for instance, my son is in the fourth grade, and, if you look at his hearing, a standalone, he doesn't seem to be impacted very much in the classroom. And same thing with Vision. I mean, a lot of times he does really well in the classroom, but sometimes if he's tired or maybe it's really bright out, and the teacher's standing in front of the window and there's a lot of glare, or the lighting is just off, or it's really fourth grade classrooms to be really loud, there might just be a lot of sensory things going on. He really can be impacted a lot by that dual sensory loss. And sometimes that really can be hard to understand for teachers, because if you just look at the deafness or the vision loss as a standalone, they seem to be doing well. But you add that dual sensory loss, and sometimes it can become a challenge in the classroom. I've seen it also be really a challenge from an O&M perspective, and we still haven't figured out exactly how to deal with it, but a lot of times, my sons have both had difficulty crossing streets safely, because sometimes their hearing is quite well with the cochlear implants, but sometimes they can't localize and determine where the cars are coming from. And so we've really been struggling to try to find, the best way to have them safely cross those streets. Because it just looks a little different for them, and it depends on the situation. So collaboration with other agencies, with the Helen Keller the VR agencies has been really helpful, because we've been able to get other team members to give us some ideas and strategies.
Thank you so much for sharing that insight and just the complexity of the picture and putting together information in unique ways. And really, I think of working with people who are deafblind is such an honor. You learn so much from individuals who are deafblind, who have that experience. And then you also learn so much about collaboration. And thank you so much for sharing about the role of the orientation and mobility specialist in particular with your sons. Could you reflect a little bit more, Lane, on what you've learned from your sons directly, and maybe how it has inspired you to do what you're doing as a PhD researcher?
Sure. So when my oldest son was probably around the age of 9 and 10, he was beginning to learn Braille. That's about the same time that he started to learn how to use the cane and work with the orientation mobility specialist on a regular basis. But at that point in time, his vision wasn't too off the best. We were just starting those skills. So when we first started working with the O&M specialist, it really was strictly that O&M, like how do they learn how to use the cane? And so that was pretty narrowly focused at that point in time. And then as he got older, that person that was on our team we had this great relationship with her. And, she began to really understand our family's needs and my son's needs. And so, it was what I saw happen. And, it was really like in middle school that this started happening, is that she would talk to him and in collaboration with us, ask him what his future goals were for after high school. What does he like to do? What kinds of places does he want to learn how to go to? So, up until that point, it was really, he was only going to places that, his family was going to. But, does he want to learn how to go to the ice cream store? Does he like chocolate? He wants to go to the chocolate factory? Or just what are his interests? And so the O&M specialist was really great about asking him what his goals were, both from a recreation and leisure perspective, but also just from a career and a post-secondary perspective. And then she really just sort of worked with our family to figure out how to structure those times. She met with us, my son, weekly. She would plan bus routes to get to those locations. She would plan outings to go to the bank to set up a bank account, learn how to use online banking, figure out how to do budgets, work on organizational skills with him, As she started doing Running Start and taking some college courses, she went up to the disability office with him and helped him. She really was the support person. She led those meetings at that point in time. But she helped him to gain those skills necessary to be able to do that. She helped him maneuver the food court at his new college campus. She helped him work on shopping. And, you know, when they come up with plans, they're doing that together. So he's telling her, look, this is what I want to be able to do when I leave and go to college. And so it's really been a great collaborative process, and she's really good about keeping our entire family in the loop about that too. And if I see something that he's struggling with, you know, I can communicate that with her and make sure we're working on the same things with him. And so for our youngest son, you know, I sort of felt like we started a little bit late on all of this. For my older son, it's worked out okay, but I always wondered, what does it mean to start working on self-determination and some of these other skills, goal setting and things like that, younger? So our orientation mobility specialist has been working, probably started at the age of 8 to work with my younger son. But really, what does it mean to have a vision loss and a hearing loss and working on those self-awareness skills? Like, what do you tell people when they ask you about your cochlear implants or why you have a cane? You know, she is starting cane training with him, and he really likes it. You know, helping him work on self-advocacy skills. You know, the age of 9 and 10 is really, really, he's sensitive about his vision and hearing loss, and he doesn't really know what to tell people about it, and he doesn't want to ask for help in the classroom. And so she helps doing role-playing with him, helping him come up with that confidence to ask for help when he needs it. And we've been all working together. I've been leading the effort, but we've been teaching him to be involved in his IEP meetings. And so the O&M specialist, because he's really interested in this, has been helping him gain those skills too. And so when they meet, they kind of do a combination of cane lessons and, you know, really working on self-determination and goal setting and just understanding what deafblindness means.
It is incredibly powerful, Lane, to talk with you about this, because this expanded role, which is really an integral role of the orientation and mobility specialist in supporting self-determination and communication. You know, I heard you reflecting on teaching someone, or at least supporting them in exploring how can they communicate about why they use a cane, or how will they communicate about their cochlear implant or hearing aid with other people. That's an essential role of the orientation mobility specialist. Mm-hmm. Can you reflect a little bit more? You wear two hats. As a professional, you wear a hat who's studying to get your PhD, but you also wear this hat as a mother. Would you reflect a little bit on the value of having professional partners? You know, as a mother, what is it like to have a professional partner that helps support the self-determination piece outside of the family?
Yeah.
We know that the family is essential and that it begins with the family. But I think sometimes as a family member myself, I think of how valuable it is to have that professional partner. Would you reflect a little bit on that?
Sure. As a parent, before I started down my journey of learning a lot more about special education, I had no idea what the assignment of work curriculum was. I had no idea that there was anything more than just working on those academic skills in the classroom. And so one of the main benefits for me was to have those team members, special team members, be able to really explain the importance of those different areas, self-determination, independent living skills, career, technology, things like that. And, you know, a lot of times families may not be ready to work on those things, but I think just having those educators be there to really, like, explain what that is to families is really, really important, and I found it so valuable. And, you know, that collaboration, you know, it's collaboration with other team members. It's collaboration, like I mentioned, with other agencies and things like that. But it's all making sure you're working on the same goals together. And, you know, self-determination is something that I really had never heard about before, and it's one of my research interests. As a family member, I would be fighting for services because I really just had no idea what to do to support my kids. You know, so I've always just the other families and networking. You know, I'm a family leader in the field. And so I spend a lot of time trying to figure it out. But I've had a lot of really great IEP teams that, and O&M instructors in particular, that really took the time to know our family and know my kids. And it was critical because they were able to really understand where we were at. And, you know, I know that they may have shared what self-determination was maybe a few years ago, but if I wasn't ready to hear it at that point in time, it was really great that we had that relationship so that they knew that when it was the appropriate time to bring it back up and say, hey, maybe we should add an IEP goal in regards to that this year. Or maybe we could focus the next couple of lessons on, you know, working on these skills. What do you think? So it really has been helpful. But as, you know, thinking about it from a professional perspective, you know, the other thing that I've learned is that, you know, there are barriers to teaching that. A lot of times I see my O&M instructor that works with my kids. There's so many different things to work on, and it's hard to prioritize all of it. And, you know, it's not necessarily a lack of time, but it's how do you prioritize all of that? And so it's been helpful to have that partnership to talk through to help prioritize. You know, and a lot of these things, I know from talking with other TVIs and O&M instructors that sometimes there's, you know, confusing whether or not it's something that you work on specifically or if it's an overarching skill that you're going to work on as you're working on other things. And so as I reflected on the role of the O&M instructor and how they work with my kids, it struck me that, you know, self-determination, for instance, is infused through all of the things that they're working on. You know, when they're working on independent living skills, they're always asking, you know, what do you want to do? What, you know, not just saying we're going to be working on money management today, but, you know, having them think about those goals first and then getting to the independent living skills. And when you're out and about doing those outings, always asking, you know, what the student wants to do and letting them take the lead and starting to make those choices for themselves. And so I think it's all of those things sort of happen together and in that collaboration with the family and other members of the IEP team is critical.
You know, what I love about this conversation, Lane, is what I hear reflected in all these elements that you're talking about, the element of trust and building trusted relationships. You know, trust, really effective collaboration comes through that trusting relationship. And I heard you reflect on the trust that's developed between the orientation mobility specialist and the individual, so your sons as young developing people. On into adulthood, they may work with orientation and mobility specialists at different points in their lives. So there's that trusting relationship. And then there's the trusting relationship that the O&M has with the family to develop that collaboration. You and I were at this wonderful international conference recently, Deafblind International, Network of the Americas. And you also shared sometimes what happens in families and professional partnership when trust breaks down, when there's a break in that trust. And I know today we're focused so much on what's working and the positive things that have happened. Could you reflect on some of what you've learned through your research about trust and collaboration?
Sure. First off, I wanted to, when you were talking about that and trust, one of the things as a parent, specific to working on these, for an O&M instructor working on these skills, is, you know, making sure that for a parent, it's kind of scary to think you know, the focus for my O&M instructor worked with my son to, he rode the bus by himself to, you know, he went to a bus station, transferred, you know, it was a couple hours. And he was quite young, and, I mean, she was in the car behind him, and they were doing this. But it's trying to find that balance between safety and independence. And, you know, although I see the benefit, it's really hard as a parent to you're trusting that O&M instructor to know what's best and know what your student is capable of, your child is capable of, and sometimes that's hard, and that takes trust. So that's critical for that relationship, but it's important overall because we've seen that sometimes if families aren't getting what they need and there's not trust between those team members, conflict can occur in IEP meetings. You know, it's that communication piece of it is extremely important. And so, as I was mentioning, this is what we're working on, or this is what I saw when I was out working with your child. Maybe you could ask them about it at home, and really just having that constant communication and really just asking the family, like, what do you want that communication to be? Some people like a lot of communication. Some people, you know, don't want a lot of communication, but really just talking about it and making sure that you understand that. The trust is really the thing that holds it all together, because once you've lost trust, then you're not going to be able to, that team is not going to be very successful in helping that student meet those IEP goals, and it's just going to lead to future conflict.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Essential. And other reflections that you have on maybe some research that you've done with families that talks about what are some ways that people can support trust. You mentioned communication as one of the most essential ways. Is there anything else that you've discovered in your work as a professional or as a parent?
I think that, I've done quite a bit of research on both self-determination and how that's taught, and then also just looking at IEP team dynamics and collaboration. It does come down to a lot of communication, knowledge and competency, for families to really know that there's somebody on the team that really knows, their area of expertise, and that builds trust. And more importantly, not just knowing about, deaf blindness, for instance, but knowing what the child needs. And if families really can feel like you have an understanding of what their child needs, then that is a real, that's a real effective way to build that trust and have that relationship be really positive for the IEP team. And then that will lead to improved student outcomes. So I would say that there's lots of factors that factor into it, but I think that trust, communication, knowledge of team members, and knowledge of the disability and the individual needs of the student are really, really important. And if families feel like team members have that, then that trust is going to be there.
Absolutely. I have another question, and it's more related to the transition process, which you're living with right now. Getting older, moving on, becoming an adult. What advice would you give to orientation and mobility specialists about that balance? So as a young adult moves into those young adult roles and gets prepared for leaving, how should an O&M specialist balance communication with the young adult and with the family to maintain that trust? Maybe particularly if a family is less certain about the child transitioning into this role. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So first off, for my older son, he didn't intend to transition me any of his IEP meetings until he was 16. And at that point in time, really, it was attending. He wasn't actively participating in the IEP team meeting at that point in time. They just looked at him and said, what should we write on the transition part of the IEP? What do you want to do when you grow up? And he was a teenager. He didn't know at the time. So I would say that, you know, what my hope is for my younger son is to be able to have those conversations earlier. So, and because that helps not only the student, but it helps the family. So if you start to have those conversations about what the future goals are at the age of 16, that's quite late. And so it doesn't give the family enough time to process what steps might they might need to take in order to make that possible. And, you know, it's hard to come up with a plan at that point in time. So, you know, if you can start to have those conversations earlier, I believe it will really help prepare families and students to be able to do that. So that's really important. And, you know, just it's hard to find the balance. But for us, you know, as my student got older, you know, the trust was there between the family and the O&M instructor. So we were able to, and my son's a pretty good communicator. So they would have most of the conversations about this, but then the O&M instructor would connect with me every couple of months. And we worked out this plan that they would work on all of these things. If they needed me, they would come and they would communicate with me. But that most all, you know, that the discussion needs to be between my son and the O&M instructor, because I'm trying to teach him to be independent and prepare himself for college. But, you know, I want to make sure that I know what's going on too. So, you know, it doesn't happen all that often, but every couple of months we always check back in. And my son's always included in those conversations too, so that we all know everyone's on the same page.
That is really great advice. And I really just appreciate you, Lane, in opening up and sharing this time with our students today, with the listeners. Is there any other advice that you would give, kind of as closing advice, to orientation and mobility specialists in training? And maybe bear in mind, too, the whole range, because I know you're familiar with this. Students who may have multiple disabilities, working with adults who have diverse needs, what kind of advice would you offer to this group?
Yeah, so I would just say a couple of things. I mean, I think that collaboration with families is really critical, and just really understanding where the family's coming from. And sometimes they may not be ready, and just being aware of what other things the family might be going through. I do believe that self-determination is possible for all students. For instance, it just may look different, but it's possible. And so just really finding a way, when I've talked to a lot of TBIs, it's really just finding a way, something that works for that particular student, and finding a way to communicate with that student. You know, there's just various ways to do that. It's just not giving up. And, you know, if you need help, asking the family and asking other team members for support. Because there might be something that's working for them that you can tap into. And I just think that the role of the O&M instructor for us has been really critical, because, you know, you're out and about and trying to work on those skills out in the community. And so it gives you a really unique opportunity to make a huge impact on a student's life. And so I'm just really thankful for the O&M instructors that we've had, and I'm just really excited for all of you to be going into the field. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, Lane. It's been a pleasure talking with you, and we'll stay in touch.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks again. Take care. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye.